Good morning, good afternoon, good evening from wherever you're tuning in for today's episode of second episode of the Freedom Series live stream session. So I've got Matthew Boone from Sales Sniper, used to be a sniper, now does sales, hence Sales Sniper.
It's that simple.
How you doing, brother?
Yeah, good man. How are you?
Yeah, going really well, thank you. And if you're joining us live on any of the interweb platforms right now, welcome. Thanks so much for joining us. Tonight's episode is going to be hot. Rafi from my team is overseeing all the different chat boxes, so please feel free to post as many comments as you can so this session can be as interactive as possible. Also, hit like, let us know that you're watching, and start a watch party. Share it out to your friends and other business owners as well. Maddie, like sniper to sales, like it's not necessarily, I guess.
I think I'm the only one. So
yeah,
I don't think.
Sense. Like it kind of makes sense when you look at it. Like the aspect of snipers and being laser focused for their targets and so forth like that, but it's not kind of the thing you'd normally find on a salesperson's resume. How did it start for you?
Well, I just really enjoyed eating, and food is expensive. So when I started my first business, so like when I got out of the military, the two options really that were in front of me were cop, or there's three options: cop, private security, which I had no desire of doing, and then personal training, right? And so I went into the personal training world after I did like a year of travel to find myself where I was post-military and stuff like that. Spent all the money that I'd earned in the military, which is fun. So I came back totally broke. I was sleeping in a friend's house for 6 months because he got deployed. So he's like, hey, you can have my house for 6 months rent free. I was like, perfect. I had another friend that was in Fitness First, and he's like, hey, you can come and study under me. And he was pretty successful. So I was like, great. And then I quickly like read the room and saw the dynamic. And I was like, making loads of money, not. And I was like, the how good they are at fitness bears no impact on how much money they're making. It's really about how well they can talk to people and so like that. So I started doing things, and I started doing things differently in terms of, I really heavily developed very quickly. So I spent every dollar I made for the first 12 months of being a trainer on courses, probably spent $60,000-$70,000 on courses in that first year. And then I was like, yep, I'm good enough. Like now it's business, because that's what's going to take me through to the future. I can get clients results. I don't need to be the guy. I have no desire. Right. And So I did that, and I did things like, Monday, 6 to 8 PM, I just did sales. I would walk the floor. I'd prospect. And that's why I was always busy. So I became very like sales focused. And then when I opened up my own gyms, I realized I had no idea what I was doing in either sales or marketing, really. And so I had to kind of go all in to figure out, because I was in a very bad place financially. I'd invested a lot of money, including a lot of Amex's money, a lot of credit, Visa's money, and a fair bit of the bank's money into opening up this gym. And, I hit that point where I was like, man, you need to start learning how to convince people to give you cash. So that's where it all started.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And I'm curious to know, from all the people watching this today, whether it's live or on the replay as well, what's your relationship like with sales? Do you find that sales is a vital part of your business's needs, or is it something you try to avoid? I'm just curious to know. Jump in the comments, let us know. Rafi, fed it through. Sales is an interesting thing, Matt, because a lot of people believe that they're not in sales. A lot of business owners are like, oh, like I can't sell, I'm not in sales.
Yeah, that's adorable. Yeah.
What's your view on that?
I mean, we've been, I think you hear it on every sales trainer's podcast or Instagram, like you're selling from the time you're a kid. Yeah. You know what I mean? Everything is persuasion, whether you're trying to get a date, you're trying to convince your parents to let you stay up later, whatever it is, like everything is a sale. And so I think there's a big context of really horrific sales cultures that's been passed on to us. And that's where that comes from. So that whole always be closing, Wolf of Wall Street, Ponzi type scheme type selling has really given a really bad name to salesperson. And when someone knows you're a salesperson, then like they kind of, they back away. So I think that's where all that context comes from. And people don't want to admit to themselves that they are in sales, because then they feel like they're that typical sales guy, when in reality, you're probably not.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting point. I've seen sales change a lot in the last 18 years I've been in business, and more obviously looking at sales and salespeople and sales processes. How have you noticed that the sales dynamic and platform has changed from, I guess, the time that you started back walking the floor to now? Because selling now, I think you'd agree, is very different There's still some fundamental principles, but it's a very different approach now to what it was, you know, say 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, well, I think that the buyer, the level of sophistication, and that might not even be the right word, but I think like the level of trust in the marketplace is dramatically reduced. So like, and even like the really good guys, like the era of like, you know, really typical one call closers, like sales have longer tails these days. And I think you have to really do that because there is so much competition in the marketplace. And you have to have a process that kind of nurtures people through that. It ties off the logistical side. It also ties off the emotional side of the brain. And so you have to kind of really understand the journey. But I think the biggest difference is just all the tactics are far more emotional, far less pushy, I think, these days, which is a really good thing. The old school double bind close, you know, Visa or MasterCard or really assumptive selling, it just doesn't seem to work. And that's how I was taught. And it used to work. And it started working less and less and less the more and more people did it. And then, you know, these things evolve. The same as marketing is ever evolving. Sales, for some reason, people think the sales is the same always. But if marketing evolves, sales has to evolve with it. And I think it's a much slower process because I think that there's less thought leaders in the sales world than what there are in the marketing world, to be honest. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting space, especially like you've got companies out there that are promoting like, you know, I'll become a closer, become a one call closer. I know for us, every time we've advertised for salespeople, we get all these people that call
in suits
closers. And, you know, when you look into it, they haven't got any real experience in, you know, building solid relationships, especially on the phone. And selling over the phone, especially when you're talking like 25, 30, 50, 100K product, it's not an easy feat by any stretch of the means to do that in a one call or two call close. It's absolutely possible. We do it every day of the week, as you guys do as well, but it's not the easy skill set. I never forget that a mentor said to me many years ago, he said, Barry, the stronger that your marketing is, the weaker your sales team could be. Yeah. And back then I'm like, oh, but our marketing's strong. Like we're generating a few hundred leads a week. Like our marketing's strong. He's like, yeah, you might be getting a few hundred leads a week, but how many of those leads are actually your ideal prospects? How warm are those leads? Are they just opted in for a lead magnet, or are they actually opting in because they want to have a conversation around working with your company? And to me, that was a game changer back then because I was like, oh, wow, like getting leads doesn't mean they're good leads. Getting leads doesn't mean your marketing's working. It means you're getting leads.
I think that's where data comes into it. You've really got to have those data-driven decisions that you can so, okay, like from an objective, unemotional standpoint, what is the quality of our lead? And then how many leads are we going to need to get into a sale? And then what can we do to nurture the people who aren't the perfect prospect right now to put them back into a pipeline?
Yeah.
And I think that's been something that I know when I see a lot of companies are incredibly lazy at, which is like follow up. And it's almost like the if you don't buy now, you're dead to me type mentality.
Churn and burn, like very short-term focused.
Yeah. Which for sales, like the guys who can nurture, like one of our guys, Will, like he makes more sales of follow-up than anyone I've ever seen. And so, and you could contest, well, he should be better at closing in one call. It's like the result, I don't really care about the weekly results. I care about the monthly and quarterly results, you know, and he's statistically very, very good at what he does, but he has a way of getting people over the line 3, 6, 8 months later, which is phenomenal because he has that farming process. And that's a really important step to take. I think that one that a lot of people miss out on, and it kind of skews the metrics in your favor if you're not as tactically gifted, but if you have that good, consistent follow-up.
Yeah. The challenge with that is, though, is that business owners need to move past that hit need for immediate gratification in order to play that game. And many business owners are coming from that place of scarcity, like just trying to pay the bills, just trying to put food on the table. And so it's like they're either in or they're out. And there's not that longer term focus in place, which I think is a huge importance. I was talking to my sales team this week as well. And I said to them, like, number of sales is one metric to measure, but there's content and there's context that need to be taken into consideration. You can go and sign 10 clients this week, but how many of those clients actually stay? How many of those clients actually refer to the business? How many of those clients actually get success because they show up and they implement what's being shared to them? So I think this is where, as you said, like data-driven decisions is really important, but also having both a short, medium, and long-term viewpoint on the sales cycle and seeing it all the way back from the moment that you attract and nurture a client all the way through to not just the first sale, but the multiple sales, the referrals and so forth thereafter.
Yeah. That's the difference between running away from something and running towards something. So like when you're short-term focused, you've got that wall behind you and you're just running away from it. And the moment you kind of get that oh, okay, I'm good at this. I know what I'm doing. I've got some stability. Then you start running towards stuff. And that's when you really start focusing long-term and putting hooks in the water and, you know, being patient with which ones come up and making sure that they're the right people. Yeah. And that's hard for business owners and salespeople to do. But definitely when you see it, when businesses focus on the long-term and like, cause when they bring us on, they're like, hey, we want to do it. And I'm like, no, there's no more than 5 calls in the diary, like 5 sales calls for the first 3 weeks. Like that's it. That's all we're allowing. Cause we need to do the proper review process. I don't want your cash flow to fall off. Don't stop doing the sales. Like if you're the business owner, keep doing sales while we bring this up. You know what I mean? Cause otherwise this guy's going to need 2 to 3 weeks to figure it out. Cause that's just the way it is. There's different questions you get. So, and let's have a gradual escalation of calls because that just makes sense. And if people don't want to do that, I'm like, okay, have a good time. Bye. Like it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. A lot of it is wanting to outsource that pain and discomfort as well. I want to dive. I've got a bunch of questions coming through here, which I'll ask in a second. I want to dive into, after we answer the questions, a little bit around saying no, because something that we speak a lot to our clients about is helping them to get clear on who they actually really want to work for and saying no to everyone else. Mm-hmm. And it's something that business owners can find, entrepreneurs, we can find difficult to turn away business because it's like, oh, that's money. We can help them. You know, our product will work for them. And it's all well and good, but there's a longer term cost, I feel, in making those decisions. Let's talk about it now for a second. We'll jump the questions. If you guys got any questions, please post in the chat. We've got them here. A question from Kathy, Colin, and Matt. We'll get to those in a second. If you've got any other questions, please post them there now. Let's talk about that a little bit. Like, number one, like, what's the mindset behind, do you feel, entrepreneurs saying yes to everything? And how do we make that switch?
Yeah, well, it's funny, right? Because like some don't intentionally. You know what I mean? And then like, and it can work out if you have a lot of structures in place and you plan for it. Like there's a great guy called Hormozy, who's an extraordinary, I think that he's 70 million a year, right? That's extraordinarily amazing. Successful amazing. Fitness business coach. And he says that you should sell absolutely everybody, scrape the bottom of the barrel, and then have a program and delivery that's so good that you turn the bottom of the barrel into winners, right? Now that is spoken from a man with an infrastructure that makes $70 million a year. Right? Like, so it's almost like he's gotten to a point where he said no to a bunch of people, created a great business with a great culture, then gotten to the point where he can say yes to people who he wouldn't have previously. So that's kind of a funny one. Who I only heard that the other day. And I was like, that's an interesting point that I've never heard before. Yeah. But I think like for me in my business, like I'm terrible at saying yes to stuff. Like, but I think that's because I'm a salesperson. I'm really easily sold. Right. So like I almost get sold to by clients, potential clients, you know what I mean? Like, as you know, right. Cause you know me very well. And then that's why I've got someone to counterbalance me where it's like, I don't actually have, even though I'm the founder and the owner and you know what I mean? I have to have someone sign off on something because like, I might say yes to things that we don't have the resources to actually do, even though we can do the work. So I think having someone in your business that will say no to you, I think is incredibly important, having that check and balance, as they say. But then also like your business truly is shaped by the people that you say no to. And like every time I've said yes to anything where I've had even the smallest gut inkling that I shouldn't do it, it never turns out well. And so in the last 6 months the last 4 months, I've really listened to that. Like we get a lot of opportunities and I've said, well, that just doesn't feel like that's going to be a good move. Yeah. That guy's going to be a headache. It's not going to be worth it. But again, I think it comes from a mindset of abundance. And I think unless you have a coach who is someone who can give you the real source and someone you can bounce ideas off, I think it's a very difficult thing to reckon in your own mind by yourself to say no to somebody when there is money on the table.
Yeah. Yeah. Really nicely put. There's a couple of things I want to say is realize that every time you say no to somebody or to something, you're actually saying yes to you. Right? That's the first, there's a small mindset shift there that is quite significant. Every time you say no to somebody or something else, you're actually saying yes to you and what you like. Like, I believe that the universe conspires to help us. And the universe is only ever saying yes to that we ask for. And if we take on board less desirable clients, we tend to have more of them show up because we're allowing that flow of energy to come through our business. Mm. And I remember back when I had my trades business, and I'm sure that people watching this can relate. Every single time I took on board a client and I gave them a discount, they haggled and I gave them a discount, they were always the jobs that went to shit. They were always the jobs that caused the biggest headache. They were always the jobs that they made money on out of trying to do the right thing, right? And help these people out. Yet the jobs that I stood my worth, stood my ground, and charged the prices that I needed to deliver them a phenomenal service, always turned out amazing, always had great reviews, great clients, and always made money off them.
Yeah.
Now, interesting point is you put that around homozing. This is why I believe that business is not like linear. Business is not like do the same thing over and over and get the same result. Like, no, like the attitudes and mentalities to get to $1 million are very different to get you to 10 million. Now, like you put, it's like, homozy, I guarantee in the beginning, didn't say yes to everyone. Like, you can't build a scalable business by saying yes to everyone and yes to everything, because it's not systemizable. It's not replicable. So in the beginning, you need to decide who it is you really want to work for. Who are the people that will pay, play, and stay? Like, they're willing to pay the bills and pay on time and pay the prices that you charge. They play as in, like, culturally, they're a great fit. Like, you love hanging out with them. You love working with them. They couldn't be your best mates. And they stay for a long period of time. They refer to you. They love what you do. They're happy to tell everyone else about it. Like, they're the type of clients that you want. Now, sure enough, when you get to 10 million, 20 million, 30 million, 40 million, it's a very different story, because you've got bigger infrastructure, bigger resources. You can create more products and services. But if you're trying to scale a business from a few hundred thousand dollars a year, even 1 or 2 million, over the $10 million mark, you really need to niche down in terms of who you're going after and what it is you're delivering.
Well, the riches are in the niches, right? As they say in the States. And that's true. Like, you're better off speaking to, like, passionately speaking to a small subset of the population than sort of dispassionately speaking to everybody, which is why that those huge marketing, you know, which is why, like, you know, Coca-Cola can do brand awareness campaigns. It's not a great use of money for me. If I was to get a billboard, it would not be a good, there'd be very little point, you know? So yeah, the different levels of business, I think, really dictates that. But saying no is difficult, but I think it's a super important thing to do.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Yeah. Let's start with some questions. If you're joining us live tonight, welcome. So grateful to have you here. Please post any questions you've got for myself and Matt in the chat section, and also hit the like button. Let us know that you're watching and following on this evening. Kathy from Melbourne, if Matt was to evaluate how he's cultivated his leads over the years, or maybe even let's go broader, Matt, like companies you've worked for, how they've cultivated their leads. Did they rely on tech stuff like, you know, HubSpot, ClickFunnels, bots, et cetera? Or did a traditional phone call generate better opportunities?
In my opinion, cold calling is still the most powerful marketing tool on the planet, right? But it's really hard to do. Like, it's one of those things where literally if you have a good person who can do it, it's like an unlimited lead generation for very low cost, right? But in saying that, 99% of people won't do it.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that tech stuff is great, and I think it makes it easier. But do I think you have to have it? Probably not. But I think that's changing. I think a good message will be a lot of things. But for example, in my business, we're relatively successful, and I've done absolutely no marketing except for organic content. None whatsoever. So I do like Facebook stuff on my personal Facebook page. I have two other Facebook pages and an Instagram. I just provide great quality content, and that's all I do. I have a Kartra, which is like a membership site that a monkey can build, and I don't have a ClickFunnels, I don't think. And there are easier ways to do it. Like, phone sites is a great way. It's like ClickFunnels, but you can do it on your phone. You can build it in 10 minutes, right? Shout out to Drewby Wilson and Ryan Stuman for that one. It's a great program. But yeah, like, I really don't think you need it. And like, organic is so powerful these days. Like, you have an audience on Facebook, and you can then split that up to your business, your personal, and you have so many things that you can use in order to build a successful business. Like, we probably sell, you know, we must sell at least $5,000 to $7,000 a week of like coaching on Facebook. And that's just organic, and that's just through DMs. That's not us reaching out. That's people reaching out to us. We also do some outreach, but it's very, very subtle, very, very low key. So I guess I've talked myself around. No, you don't need it. If you're willing to do the work and be a content machine. If you don't want to be a content machine, then you're going to need the rest of that stuff. But the more content you do, whenever I used to run the gyms, right? So I would do heaps of content for my gyms, and my lead cost was a third what everybody else was. And people would say, oh, what are you doing with your ads? And I go, man, it's no different. Everyone's copying each other, right? Mm-hmm. That's how marketing works. And then somebody finds a loophole, and then everyone copies that, right? But the only difference really between me and the other gyms, because there were 56 gyms in the same postcode as what I had, because it was in Bondi, was I did a metric boatload of content. And then I would promote that content, and I would like cycle between men and women, and I would just be smart about how I did it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to say something a bit different to what you shared.
Yeah. Well, we have totally different businesses and experiences. So
that's the point that I want to raise, is that business coaching or coaching in general, like there is so much content out there and it's very, very hard to cut through the noise organically. Organic can be a fantastic strategy, but there's a couple of things. Number one, you need to have a really clear differentiator. Like, who is it you're going after and what problem do you solve? And Matt, that's the thing your business has. You know, there's plenty of people in the sales space, but you have a very clear differentiator. And number two, you've got to be consistent. If you're going to start content, you've got to be consistent. It's not something you do today and then forget about tomorrow or next week or next month.
I do 17 pieces of content a week.
Yeah, you've got to be consistent with the content. But more important is that I'd say is understand the difference between strategy and tactic, right? Like if you want to go fishing, you need to go fishing where there's fish. And it's the same with this. Like, where are your clients hanging out? Are your clients on LinkedIn? Are they on Instagram? Are they in somebody else's audience? Like, I did nearly $1 million in my first year of coaching with no Facebook page, no website, no paid traffic, and no content marketing, like absolutely none. All I did was find where my ideal clients were in somebody else's organization. And I organized a JV to basically get access to their clientele. And that was how I grew very, very fast in the first year, nearly $1 million with none of this stuff. So I think it's easy to get caught up in, oh, I need to be doing emails, need to be doing LinkedIn and all this other shit. No, you need to first spend the time to understand who are your clients, where are they hanging out, what are their problems, and what's the easiest and most cost-effective way to market to them. And that might not be organic, it might not be paid traffic, it might be cold calling, right? But understand, I guess, the difference between strategy and tactics. And really, where I see a lot of people get lost is they spend too much time trying to like write copy and build funnels, and not enough time trying to understand who the clients are. And that's like, you know who your clients are very, very well.
Yeah, I'm very specific in what I do and I don't try and go outside my box at all.
Yeah.
I have no desire. I get asked to go outside my box every day and I'm like, no, I like my box.
So hopefully that clears that up. Good question there, Kathy. One here from Colin from Perth. Sales is sometimes a stressful topic for some younger people. What stories or narratives would you tell to motivate younger people to love sales? Aside from the money issues, of course.
I would say like sales is service, right? So, and the way that I see it and like the shift that happened to me was like, my gym and what I did, like I genuinely believe that it was good for somebody. And the real thing that wanted me to get better at it was I was sick and tired of being in front of people who were in their own way, like 30, 40, 50 kilos overweight, telling me that they need to do this. They can't do it right now because of one event that they have in 6 weeks' time. And I was like, that is absurd. It's obscene. I'm a hyper-driven person. I don't get it. And I wasn't very empathetic or sympathetic at that time in my life either. I was kind of fairly sociopathic in how I approached the world. Everything was very black and white, right? And so I was like, well, you're obviously weak-minded and you should go die in a fire, right? That's kind of how my mind worked. So then as I sort of started to work with these clients and have like much more genuine interactions with people instead of just like military making fun of each other and all that kind of stuff, then I started to realize myself that like I was given a lot of those habits as well. My parents, God love them, like they did a lot of great things, but food like was not one of them. And so like I struggled with weight for a long time, but it wasn't until I met my wife where I saw the habits that she'd been given versus the habits that I'd been given. And I kind of had a realization and was like, oh, that's not my fault. That's a habit that I was given. And like, I need to try and break, it's my responsibility to break the habit, but I can't vilify me for like always grabbing a Coke and a, you know, white bread sandwich as a default. Like that's just kind of what was programmed into me. Right. Mm. And so the people who were coming to me are the same, but they weren't lucky enough to meet somebody who was like, hey, you know, you do this. I was like, oh, it was one of those glass shattering moments. And that's kind of when I really became more like, oh, okay, I need to help this person figure this out. And that's essentially what sales is. And so the more I started to get into that and the more empathy and sympathy I started to feel for people and the more I started to be able to kind of peel back the layers of why and what impact it's having on them, then I was able to get them to make a genuine change, which was for the better. And if you believe in what you do, in my opinion, you have a moral obligation to allow people to get out of their own way to be able to experience your product and service, which enriches their life. Yeah. And so you kind of have to get over that piece and realize that it is for the best for you. It's for the best for your family. It's also the best for them and their families that they experience these things. And so if you believe that, then do what you need to do and learn the things you need to learn. And I guess muster up that confidence and energy that you have to do to allow them to go through that process. Because people fight tooth and nail to stay in their comfort zone.
Yeah.
But nothing good happens there. So.
Yeah. I love that. And great question, Colin. I'd like to share something from a completely different perspective. And that's when I used to run a kitchen and bathroom manufacturing business, and I started to bring in designers. And like, we had big targets. I wanted them to hit each minimum $88,000 a month in sales. And to, you know, a 22-year-old, 25-year-old that was earning $1,000 a week, the thought of having to go and make $88,000 a month in sales was completely overwhelming for them. And a lot of stuff come up around selling. And I had this bit of a aha moment in the shower one morning. I realized, when I broke it down, I was like, $88,000, that's like four kitchens. Our average kitchen sale is $22,000. And so I was like, they only have to sell one kitchen a week to make budget. Like, it's not a lot. And I was like, okay, well, how many, if they have to sell one kitchen a week, how many quotes is that? And I worked out that we had a conversion percentage of, say, 50%. So I was like, okay, if they're doing two quotes a week, one of those will convert into a sale. The average sale is $22,000. They'll make budget. And I was like, how many people do they have to speak to get two quotes across the lines? Like, four people. So I went back to my sales team and said, hey, I've been thinking about your budgets and I've broken down the numbers. And what I worked out back then that I now know to be the difference between lead and lag measures. I gave them a lag measure, which is go and sell $88,000 a month. And they're like, how the hell do I do that? And they got overwhelmed by trying to eat an elephant with one bite. Whereas when I reversed and did it and broke it down and said, you just have to speak to four people a week. Just go and find four people to speak to a week, inquiries from the website, knock on people's doors, ring for referrals, whatever. Speak to four people a week and hit budget. Like, within that first month to 6 weeks, all my sales team and my designers hitting budget. And it was purely through shifting their focus around something that was seemingly so big into something seemingly so small. So if you're having issues motivating people, maybe, you know, motivate them more to have connections and conversations rather than necessarily making sales. And you'll see that sales is a byproduct, as Matt said too, like, of having those connections and conversations.
Yeah, and that also leads into like making it easier as well, because that's exactly how I used to do the gym sales. Like, that's exactly how I did it, because when I used to open the gyms, I used to have to hit 9 sales a day, yeah. Right? That was my...
A lot of pressure.
It was a lot, right? So I had to do about 200 sales, anywhere between 150 and 250 sales in 3 to 4 weeks when we opened the gym. And it was before the gym was open and had to be paid on the phone, right? And so I was like, well, okay, I knew all my numbers. And then I basically said, okay, I know that worst case scenario, if I do 100 dials, I'll make 2 sales. That's the worst case possible scenario. So I was like, I know if I do like 500 dials a day, I know that I'll hit quota always. Now, I might double it. Like, I think my record was like 14 in one day or something like that. But yeah, I knew I could do that. So then I was just like, okay, I'll get an order dialer and then I'll just upload all these leads and yeah. I'll just sit on an order dialer and I'll just go bing, bang, bong. And then like it made me, doing that freed up my mental space where it was so much less stressful, because one dial on my phone was 1 minute. By the time I dialed it, press the button, but yeah. I can do 4 dials a minute on an order dialer.
Yeah.
And then you can do predictive dialers and all kinds of stuff where you dial 5 people at once, but there's a bunch of stuff you can do with that. But that meant that I could do 4 dials a minute. And if it was $10 to get one person to pick up and 50% of people would have a conversation, I'd sell 50% of them. I knew it was like, you know, it was like a sale every half an hour.
Yeah.
So if I worked for 8 hours, I could potentially make 16 sales.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah. That's the decision and the discipline to get in there and do it. Got a question here from Matt. Hi, Barry and Matt. I have a lot to learn. I seem to stay in my comfort zone and get too nervous. We are very versatile with our products, dealing with tires, mechanical repairs, and 4x4 accessories. And we have around 40 plus calls per day per salesperson. We tend to cut the customers off to get the next call or deal with other customers or issues with the business. What advice would you give for Matt, Matty Boyd?
Yeah, it's funny. So I actually just got approached by a really large like dog kennel facility, and they have like multiple locations all over Australia, and they want me to go through and do an audit on all their front end stuff. So I was like, yeah, cool, I can do that. So I'm basically like, as the business owner, one thing that I would do is when you have a lot of staff like that doing a lot of calls is definitely throw a secret shopper in. It really helps you get some insight into what's actually going on, and then make sure that you actually have some processes in place where they actually know what to do. So first of all, like, everyone has to be uniform in how they're going to address clients and what they're going to say. Like, if you don't have a script and have a very tight process, that's really important. So you can have an element of consistency, right? and then outcomes and then actions on for each outcome. Made a sale, what do we do? Okay, there's a follow-up required or a no sale, like not a good fit. And then what happens to those leads and those clients, right? That's super important. That will give you like data to where you can make some decisions on. But before that, it's just like, that question is like, how much spaghetti can we throw at a wall and then see what sticks and figure out how to make it better. But the most important thing is that first and foremost, you go back 3 months, set some KPIs, have a look at if you have any processes, any SOPs, bring some uniformity into what you're doing, and then pick out who's doing the best and try and replicate what they're doing in the rest of it. That's like the lowest hanging fruit of what you could do to kind of increase the efficiency of what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Good response. And I think too, Maddie, is if you get your team to write down what are all the questions you're getting asked during those calls, what are the calls about? Because there's the way too, you can probably organize your phone to say, hey, like if you want to inquire about tires, press one. If you want to inquire about accessories, press two, and have a salesperson specifically on the tires or on the accessories rather than having someone versatile across multiple things, because you could probably find you could cut a lot of the noise down as well. It's like, oh, if you're ringing up to find out this, yeah, check it out on the website. And even look to implement things like messenger bots and so forth to answer all the common questions, because what you probably find is you're getting the same questions over and over and over again that your sales guys are having to answer, rather than having them scripted or having some automated way you had to deal with them as well. So cool question. Kathy, does Matt have any case studies of introverts loving sales? Can I just say first off, like I'm an introvert. I'm actually an introvert and I love sales.
There's a great book about an alter ego, your sales alter ego. I forget what it's called. I think it might be called Alter Ego. Basically where you like be almost you become somebody else when you sell, right? So it's a pretty legitimate strategy.
Yeah,
like having triggers I think is super important. Like so there's two things that I do. So I collect quite fanciful cards, right? I have a lot of cards, so it's one thing. So I do a lot of like, you know, cardistry and stuff like that. So like just when I'm selling, and that's a quiet mind strategy, right? So it allows me to do something. I'm very fidgety. Like I can never sit still, right? Which is kind of funny because of what I used to do. I used to sit still for hours at a time, but I hated it. I used to like flex my hamstrings nonstop, right? Like I have to move. It's a, and so that allows me to quiet my mind. And then like I wear a hat when I sell almost always. Like I wear a hat most of the time anyway, but always when I'm selling, and it puts me into sales mode because the way that I talk when I coach or sell is very different to when I'm day to day. They're probably blending a bit these days, but I talk really fast, right? But when I coach and sell, I talk really slowly. And so I think like the introvert extrovert thing, it kind of is what it is. Like, I don't know, I'm fairly extroverted, but then in certain situations I'm introverted as well. So, I mean, but I'm fairly extroverted.
There's an interesting movie, a funny movie I watched the other week called I Feel Pretty, where like a chick falls over and bumps her head and then she wakes up in an alter ego. It's worthwhile watching, Kathy, because like essentially without giving the whole thing away, what she realizes is she's been this person the whole time. She just had to make a decision to be that person rather than the person she was being. And it's the same with sales. It's like, I think the bigger issue people have with sales is not whether they're introverted or extroverted, but more so around like being seen or getting it wrong or not being good enough and all the other shit that we tell ourselves, not actually whether we're introverted or extroverted, but the stories we have inside of our head. And I think, Matt, like your strategy as well for quiet mind is a powerful one.
Yeah. And I think like Marco, who's probably my top salesperson, is quite introverted. Like yeah, when you go out, yeah, he's very quiet. But on the phone, he's a different person. Like he genuinely is. He was trained by Grant Cardone. So I've softened him a lot, but he can be quite forceful in a very good way. But yeah, like I don't think it really matters. I just think it, you know, at the end of the day, if you enjoy what you're doing and you like what you're doing and then put some strategies in place to and follow a script. Like if you're introverted, definitely follow the script. Don't riff. Right. I recommend everyone follow a script in general. I think scripting is incredibly powerful. Even if you don't say it word for word, but if you have it in front of you, it stops tangents and all kinds of things that kill deals. But have that script. Write the script with someone who you know is good. Like script writing is important. Like I've paid a lot of money to get scripts written from people that I respect. And because you can then use those as frameworks and you trust them. So like there's an element of confidence that you know when you're using that, you're putting your best foot forward and you're almost like adopting that other person and you're becoming somewhat of them. So I think that that's something that I would do that would be helpful.
Yeah, outstanding. So Matt, is there anyone out there that like to connect in with you and find out, like I know you guys have got a bunch of different products and services. What's the easiest way to connect with you?
We have a podcast called Coffee is for Closers. And there's an email list that goes along with that. So we do heaps of interviews with salespeople. Also, I'm Matt Ryder on Facebook. So you can look me up. I'm the guy with that sign behind me. So it's pretty easy to tell, right? Yeah. Then you can look up Sales Sniper and you can go to salessniper.net. So those are kind of where you can find us. Most of it, like the podcast, we do a podcast a week, and then I do heaps of content on Facebook and stuff like that. So
outstanding. Definitely check out Matt Ryder and salessniper.net. Matt, if you were to have a conversation with a 10-year-old version of you, knowing what you know now and having been through what you've been through, what advice would you give him?
To be honest, man, I'd say don't change a thing. Like, you know, like, I mean, that sounds bad, but like, I've got a tremendous set of friends, a great family, two awesome kids. I have a job that I, or a business that I really enjoy. And I had to go through some businesses that I didn't enjoy and some business relationships that I wasn't super happy with to get there. But the things that I taught, the most valuable lessons that I've learned have been from the really catastrophic, or what I perceive to be catastrophic, mistakes.
Absolutely.
And so like, if I was to correct any of those, then like, who knows what the fuck would happen. So, you know, I could be back in Miami as a doctor right now being miserable because that was the original plan. Right. So what's the point of that?
Yeah. Love that. Love that. Appreciate your honesty and authenticity. And look, I just want to say a huge thank you to everyone who's joined us here live tonight. If you'd like to stay up to date with the amazing guests we have here on the Freedom Series, please click on the link below. Rafi's putting there now. We'll let you guys know we've got the next guest coming up. There's another one in about an hour and a half's time. An amazing guy, Aaron Walker from the States. Equally too, if you'd like to stay up to date with the release of my book, I think we're like less than 2 weeks away now, which is freaking awesome. Sign up for that as well. We've got a bunch of bonuses coming up for the pre-release launch as well. There's a chapter in there dedicated to lead and lag measures, KPIs and so forth, to previous conversation with Colin there this evening as well. But thank you so much for your support. Hit the like button, keep the questions and comments coming in. Matt, appreciate you, brother. Thank you so much for your time this evening.
No worries, man. Always a pleasure. Yeah, I can't wait to get my copy of the book.
Yeah, it's on its way. See you guys. Thanks very much.
Thanks, man. Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Game Changers podcast. There's a couple of things I'd love you to do to help us and help yourself to spread the message further. Make sure that you like the Game Changers on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, LinkedIn. Please subscribe by clicking the link below to ensure that you keep up to date with the weekly episodes we share here at the Game Changers podcast with amazing entrepreneurs and business owners around the world. And of course, like, if you're in a position where you may be overwhelmed with business or looking for a way to grow faster and more effectively, and you realize that the key to success is being surrounded by amazing people who have been there and done that before, I'd like to invite you to apply to have a game plan session one-on-one with one of my team here at the Game Changers. There's no cost. If you get through, all that we ask is that you are doing a minimum of $250,000 per year to really be able to utilize the strategies and the tactics and the mindset shifts that we share with you, that you're coachable, that you're a decent person, and you're willing to take on board some advice. If not, that's totally cool. But I know for me, I wouldn't be where I am right now without the support of so many mentors and coaches and resources along the way. And I'd like to pay that forwards and give back to you the opportunity to work with us one-on-one for free to put together a customized game plan. And the reason we're doing this is a couple of things. Number one is that sometimes it's just the smallest thing that can make the biggest difference. And I think that entrepreneurs and business owners have the opportunity to change the world. And if we can maybe help you to make the smallest shift to change your life and your world, you're changing ours in return. The second thing is that we are always looking for amazing clients to work with and to welcome into and invite into the Game Changers community. And so if at the end of the call, you do feel that there's a huge amount of value there, that we feel that there's a great values fit there, we can have a conversation about working together. But this game plan call, there's absolutely no obligations to work with whatsoever. Allow us to help you with the years and years and years of knowledge that we have in growing and scaling great companies. And I think that business owners are the future of the world. If there's a way that we can help you to create a better business, more profit, more fulfillment, more fun, I would love the opportunity to do that now. So click the link below, book your game plan session, make sure you follow us on social, and stay up to date with the latest episodes of the Game Changers podcast. My name's Barry William Magliddy. Thank you so much for your support, and look forward to seeing you next one. Bye for now.